Welcome to the Divine Feminine CEO. I'm your host, Rachel Lowenhertz, and this podcast is your portal into yourself, your place in the world, and how you desire to show up as you. This is a place for you to be sovereign, to make change, to master your destiny, and create a life that's crazy aligned with who you're meant to be. But who is that? And how do you manifest her? Enter, my love, and discover. Hello, and welcome back to the Divine Feminine CEO. Today, we have a very special guest. We have Sophie Cheech from Be Current with us, and she is an extremely successful entrepreneur who not only does extremely well in business, but she has a deep passion for transformation, and motherhood is one of the most obvious ones. She's a power mom. So while having her baby didn't stop her from founding more companies, writing her books, producing a documentary about 200-pound weight loss, she has continued on her own journey of internal growth, and her latest company, Be Current, really approaches productivity through the lens of self-love. And Soph has taken me through this system, so I am just so delighted to have her with us today. So Sophie, welcome, and thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I love it. Thank you.
Well, it's so funny. Soph and I actually connected through one of our mutual mentors, but then it turned out that our families have known each other for a really, really long time from the days when we were both in LA. So I think destiny kind of brought us back together. And the more that I've gotten to know you, Soph, the more I just love and admire about you. So I would love to just share a little bit about your story with our listeners, because I know they're going to find you to be really fascinating.
Wow, that's my story, huh? So I'm from France originally, and I think the cultural difference has really served me, because when you are a foreigner, like even if I am an American, I'm kind of from somewhere else, and it gives you a curiosity, and it gives you this kind of studying life that you don't necessarily have when you are where you're from. And so I would say that my life has been a series of what is true now, like that would kind of define. And so it affected my careers, it affected my relationship, and, you know, what is true? How can I love myself more in this moment? And so it's led me to, I'm an entrepreneur by DNA, probably. And there is a story that I was given 4 pencils when I was 6 years old, and I traded them for 8 and then for 16, and off I was on the sandbox selling pencils. So I think it's kind of a long line of liking the game of business. And I also very quickly had that other DNA, which is to be of service, you know, and to go to bed feeling like whatever I did, it moved the needle a tiny bit, even if it's just for one person, even if it's, you know, I interacted with someone in a way that had a lot of kindness, you know, simple ways, but to really always see that the day was contributing something. That was my engine. And as I grew as an adult, as a mother, as a business owner and writer, you know, all of those different sides to my expressions, I now can look back and see that it was all a journey of love, you know, and love of self and love of my fellow humans that I was sharing the moment with. So I don't know how specific you want me to go, but this is kind of the trends of my life, I would say.
Well, I love the way that you began with what is true for me now. And I think that that is so potent for so many moms, because, you know, I think for all of us, motherhood is this massive initiation, and suddenly we're mourning this maiden that we were before, and we're figuring out how to step into the role of mother. Now, you're a power mother, so physically, logistically, some of these things were a little bit smoother for you, but I know that motherhood was also a huge catalyst for your own inner healing. So maybe you can talk to us a little bit about that, because I know one of the places where we really connected was around how motherhood changes our priorities in such a profound way.
And again, asking the question, what is true for me now, you know, was a very strong catalyst because I have one daughter who's now in her late 20s. So the relationship obviously changes when it goes from I'm responsible for this being, you know, just all of a sudden my body spits out, you know, this human, you know, that I'm at least some responsible for. Of course, they come with their own stories. But I remember the first few years noticing how I was going through my own, like, how was it to be two when she was two? And how was it to be three and five and seven? You know, like I kind of, as she was growing, I was looking to her as a mirror of, you know, some of it felt really very smooth sailing, you know, and then something would happen. And I could see that it wasn't about her. Like it was hitting something that was unresolved in me. And I would express this gratitude to her, you know, like we would have these beautiful conversations as soon as she was young, you know, maybe four or five, you know, we would have these conversations where maybe I would have a response to her that looking back was not a great response. And I would come to her and I would say, you know, this is what happened in my life that justifies what I just did, which I don't love. So I would like to do this differently. And she and I would have these, of course, you know, according to the maturity. But I remember once I had a really good day at work and she was maybe three and I'm cooking, and to keep her occupied while I'm cooking, I took the pots and the pans and put them on the floor, and she started, you know, drumming and banging and doing all this noise. And I had a great day. So I was like having fun and like dancing to her rhythm and, you know, having this really delicious moment. Well, the next day I didn't have a good day at work and I hadn't slept well that night. And she pulls the pots and pans because she thought that was fun the day before. But that day, I don't want to hear it. I don't want the banging and the pots and the thing. And I'm really annoyed by it. And she could feel it. And it's not as fun. And I remember looking in her face and she was looking at me like, what is wrong with you? Like yesterday we had this lovely moment, you know, and how crazy making it would be for a child, you know, that my reactions, like we think it's them and like they need a timeout. Well, they didn't need a timeout yesterday because I was having fun with her banging, right? Long story to say that, you know, she always was a mirror and a reflector of my own, you know, and to be able to say, I need a timeout, to be able to say, yesterday I was all with you and we were playing and today this particular kind of playing is really not working for me. I'm going to go take a bath and make sure she's safe and, you know, but I'm going to go get myself back on track, you know, which I thought was a beautiful statement of I'm pausing and I'm questioning and I'm possibly redirecting the boat, you know, in the moment, which I think was the secret to my happiness as a mother. Frankly, I would be true in the moment. I wouldn't try to push when I was exhausted, and I would ask for help, and I would, you know, ask another mother if she could, you know, watch her when I needed to do something so I don't resent. Someone said to me years ago that it was more impactful for a child to be with them 50% of our time, but 100% present, mm-hmm. than to be with them 100% of the time, but be really always not really there because we're, you know, occupied in our head thinking of something else. And I remember, you know, thinking when I'm there, I'm going to be there. That's my priority. I'm not going to be half on my phone and half annoyed that this book is so long and skip a page because I want the book to be faster, you know, none of that. And that helps a lot. I mean, being present is a cool quality as a human, you know, forget as a mother, of course, but just as a human in general, to be in this very moment, like nothing else is happening, is, I think, is an incredible evolution as a human.
It is. And it's really, motherhood in so many ways is the trial by fire where we first learn to be present and we learn to take that pause, because before we become mothers, we don't really have to. We have all this spaciousness. Most of our life is lived in the pause. And then suddenly we birth this new being and we don't have as much time. Mm-hmm. We hardly have any time. Mm-hmm. We don't have a lot of energy. Our bodies are under a lot more strain. And so what you shared about having that ability in the moment to discern what is it that I need, mm-hmm. and can I show up for my child in this moment, or do I need to prioritize something else? And so there's all this depth that comes around being a mother and the ways that we learn to tune into ourselves in the moment so that we can respond rather than react to our kids. What's so interesting to me is how this parallels the work that you do now, which on the surface is about productivity, but at a much deeper level is about tuning into what's right for you in the moment. It's so much deeper. And that's why we're calling this episode Self-Loving Productivity. So talk to us a little bit about the connection between what productivity really is and how that relates to the way that we move through the season of motherhood.
Well, interestingly, the more attractive way to start to answer this question is more about what is it not? Like, I think productivity is not a list that we commit to that's defined and non-flexible. Like, I think a lot of people look at their productivity as like doing more, just more. And is it more that really moves the needle? Is it more that brings you more joy, more space? Is it more that you even know what more would mean for you? Like, what does it mean? Like, is it more work? Is it more money? Is it more time? Is it more inner joy? And people don't even question that. And so they're on this treadmill called productivity, where they're just doing. And I would like to stop that treadmill and pause and say, you know, what matters to you? Because if you're doing things that are just out of habit, or it could be out of not knowing how to say no, like a lot of people have stuff on their list that's really because they didn't have the boundary to not put it there, right? And so it ends up on my plate, but then I'm starting to do it and I'm like, why am I doing this? Why am I doing it now? Why am I not, you know, how did I say yes to this? And if you don't have a clear inner direction and purpose, it's difficult to say no, because we like to be liked, right? It's one of our human condition is we belong to the tribe. And if, as my friend, you ask me to do something, my natural tendency is to be saying yes. Well, but am I a friend to myself if I do that? Like, I remember when I was writing one of my books and a friend was building furniture from a famous Swedish store where you build furniture from. And I like doing furniture and I like that friend. And I was just like, yeah. And I spent, you know, 2 days, and then Monday came around and it was just, I had made no movement on my book, which I had committed to myself, you know, to do. And that doesn't work. That doesn't work because we unless we declare, you know, that's my commitment right now is, you know, to Rachel. And we are going to do that together this weekend. That's what we're doing. But then it has to be a very deliberate decision to redirect my focus. But if I don't do that and I'm still operating under, oh, I'm going to be making movement on my book this weekend, but I'm really building furniture with you, that's putting myself, which by the way, we do for our children as well. It's like we put them in situations where it's very difficult to win. You know, it's very difficult to feel like what you did, like giving her pots one day to play and then the next day to be annoyed. I set her up to have this really horrible moment for her and for me. And so how do we use productivity to as a gateway for our purpose? Like, is this aligned with what really matters to me right now as a mother of a young child, as a mother of a child who's now going to college? Because you'll see, as you know, your child grows, of course, there is now the other way, the emptiness thing, where the child goes away and you've built your entire life around their activities and their, you know, and where are you in the midst of that? And so when they go away, when my daughter went to college, she went to New York from LA, and people were like, oh my God, your child is going on the other side of the country. And I was like, do you do your children to keep them home? Like, yes, I raised her. Maybe being a power mother, it plays a piece here where it was important for me to raise her to be, you know, her life was not about serving mine. You know, her life is about serving herself and contributing to her tribe. And so the notion of empty nesting is as interesting to me as the other way. It's like, be present now. Okay, now my child is going away. Okay, what do I want to do now? Do I want to write a book? Do I want to travel? Do I want to, you know, do these things that I've put on hold because I was raising a child? So to be able to say what is true now, you know, continues to be my lamppost. You know, it continues to be, how do I let something into my calendar? How do I let something into my to-do list? How do I spend this moment with you? You know, it's like, it's all tinted. It's all started from, is this aligned? Does this feel good? Does it feel beautiful? Does it feel, you know, whatever my criterions might be in the moment, they may change, but to pause and question what has residence in my calendar and my to-do list and my Trello boards and, you know, whatever project management I use to have this gatekeeping kind of moment where you say, like, am I building furniture with Rachel this weekend, or am I writing my book? And I may choose to come do furniture with you, but it needs to be a choice. It needs to be a deliberate decision to let it in, you know?
Well, you said two things that I loved, and I actually stopped and wrote one of them down, which was productivity as a gateway to purpose, and what is our life serving? And these to me are huge, because yes, we can slow down and we can pause. Yes, we can slow down and we can listen. And in fact, when I teach business, I teach this method called the listen, pause, pivot method. But if we don't know what we're aligning to, if we don't have clarity around that North Star, how do we choose? Because what I encounter a lot with entrepreneurs that I'm working with is the sheer amount of overwhelm. They have so many things and they don't know what to keep and what to let go of. And it's interesting because particularly for Phoenix mothers, who are often ones that have a huge identity shift after they have their children and subsequently feel a very strong calling towards whatever they want to do for their work, that provides a little bit more clarity around what to align to. But there's this tension with mothering and where we put our families in the hierarchy. And this is why I adore your approach to productivity as a way of loving the self, because we can't do everything. We can't do everything. And yet, as women, as mothers, as entrepreneurs, we chronically take on too much.
Which that is interesting. Like, why do we do that? You know, like, again, where what is the source? Like, do I feel like I'm not enough, that if I were to do 90 more things, then I will be enough? First of all, I won't. I really truly believe that's an illusion, that if I have that particular wound and trauma that tells me, you know, I was raised by pretty narcissistic people, you know, like, which has an effect to not naturally feel like I matter. You know, when a narcissist raises a child, it's often in the spirit of, what can you do for me? And how do you reflect on me? And if you do something good, I take it. And if you do something bad, I shame you and push you away from the tribe because you made me feel bad about myself, you know? And so I was raised by a good amount of that energy. And it took me a long time to re-own, do I even deserve to have my own thoughts and my own feelings? Or do I always bow to the God of, you know, what do you think of me? And if I say yes to your thing, are you going to like me more? And will that make me feel better about me? Which none of those turned out to be true. And I think time helps to realize that. Like, I think in my 20s, I didn't know. And so I would be building furniture with my friends instead of doing something that had more great for me. So I really see that it is an act of adulting and maturing to be able to heal these wounds. And now I like being liked. I mean, if you and I spend time and you leave from our time together feeling better, or it did something good for you, that's beautiful. But is that my engine? And is that what prompts me to do what I do? No, it's a happy result. It's a happy, you know, byproduct, but it is not my biggest engine. And I think as a mother, it's confusing because now we're in charge of this little thing that really cannot function well without us. By the way, that's something that needs to be adjusted. Like, a lot of people have trouble with their teenagers because they haven't adjusted that particular behavior, you know? And so when a child is 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, they want you to decide what to eat and what to wear and who are your friends and, you know, all of that. But all of a sudden you're fired as the, I don't know, the manager. Mm-hmm. And now you become maybe the advisor, if you're lucky, you know, if you managed well that your child trusts you and you haven't been too over controlling or too over critical or too over whatever. And there's still that relationship. It's beautiful. But if you don't adjust, you get into power troubles, you know, where the child is like, think of it like a 12, 13, a young woman has her period, which means she could technically have children. And in some religions, you know, it's the age where we come an adult to our community. And what does that mean? That we're still in our parents' house under their rules and under all those, you know, relational kind of you adult decide for me child is a bit of a cultural tricky thing, because they are adults. They really are. I think our children are kept children longer than what their chemistry, you know, really calls for. Because why would you want to give a child a responsibility to raise a child? That would not be, you know, nature would not be made up that way. And so to start giving them options and choices young. I remember doing a class when she was very little where it was all about, do you want the red ball or the blue ball? But she was like 9 months old and she would reach out to the blue ball and I would say, great, you prefer the blue ball. You know, and to help her become familiar with her own choices and what to say yes to and no to. I remember one time my brother came to visit and she was maybe, I don't know, 10, 9, and he was visiting from France. It's a long journey and, you know, she hadn't seen him in a long time. And she says to him, I really want to spend time with you, but I'm really tired. And so I'd rather rest tonight if that's okay. And then tomorrow we spend time together. And she hugs him and she goes away. And my brother, who was in his 40s, you know, mid 40s, says to me, I still don't know how to do that. You know, I still don't know how to speak to my need lovingly. She was super sweet with him, but it was very clear to her that she had to take care of her body first and rest. And I just think to teach them how to do that, to model that. You know, because when I would be exhausted, I would say to her, what can we do so that for the next hour, half hour, 20 minutes, I can rest or meditate or do something so that I can come back to be a loving mom, you know, to you. And we would together decide on something and she would take care of herself and maybe that's not possible with all personalities for your children. I don't know, you know, I haven't raised other kids, but in our dynamic, it was very clear to me, to her and to me, that if I wasn't taking care of myself, I really wouldn't be able to take care of her. And as soon as she was old enough to do that, we would have these conversations, you know, what does that look like that both of us can take care of each other, or you can maybe take care of me. And she would, you know, massage my feet with her little fingers, you know, and we would have a moment of like, yeah, now I'm feeling better. I can now be with you. And, you know, it was a beautiful to look at everything as what am I teaching her in this moment? My choice is teaching her something because she's looking, not because of what I'm telling her, but because she's witnessing. Mm. And how do I display behaviors genuinely, not as a, you know, monkey to teach her something, but genuinely connect with what is this moment calling for? How do I be more loving in this moment so that she gets to witness that? You know, was a very important engine for me.
I love the way you pulled in this thread about how we model relationships to ourselves and our time and our priorities to our children, because I think that for many of us, having children is the catalyst that finally forces us to take care of ourselves. But for so many women, we have to hit a point of critical burnout before we will slow down and begin to prioritize that meditation and just that ability to articulate that to your daughter. I mean, you're right. It's absolutely the most powerful way to teach, because then she got to witness you feeling recharged. She got to see firsthand why this is important. And yet, for many of us, we still have such a resistance to receiving. We still carry such guilt around not being perfect. I know for me, I was your typical first child, overly responsible, always praised for being overly responsible, but I really had to fight against that in my adult life, because, well, guess what? That's what my brain thinks equals value. It's being overly responsible and doing all the things and not asking for help because, oh, Rachel, look, you're such a good girl for doing this on your own while we help your younger sister. So we really all do come into our motherhood season with our own flavors of inner wounding. And I love the way that you chose to work so deeply with that as you mothered, because I really think that it is our choice. We get to choose how deeply we want to engage with that and how powerfully we want to model it for our kids. And it's hard. It's really hard. I mean, I know that with my son right now, he's 5 and we're working a lot on boundaries, body boundaries, time boundaries. And so I was meditating yesterday and he came in and jumped on me. And, you know, I probably didn't respond as gracefully as I would have liked to in that situation. Uh-huh. Because I was like, you know, mommy needs to meditate now. You cannot come interrupt me. And he felt sad about that. But I am hoping that over time, you know, he starts to see this is important. We prioritize these things because they keep us healthy. So it's really big. I mean, it goes so deep in just this idea that we have the power to choose what is present for us in the moment. And I know that when you and I were talking about the Be Current system earlier, you talked a little bit about this spring cleaning mentality. And I think that's so potent because we're recording this a few weeks before the winter solstice, and that's a natural time of release. And yet I know that when I first started working with the seasons, the idea that we would have a cyclical relationship with creation and release, where we're always releasing, kind of like the way a menstrual cycle works, that was really new to me. And I honestly hadn't really considered using that same type of cyclical approach to my productivity. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about the Be Current system and why it's important to have that spring cleaning mentality so that we can release. Because I know that for me, that's actually been one of the most powerful aspects of working with your system, has been feeling empowered to release by having that bird's eye overview of what's really important for me now.
Yeah, the spring cleaning mentality, which I always looked at as a physical thing, right? There's a time where I would want to take everything from my closets everywhere in the house and decide, you know, do I want this? Am I using this? Is this that shirt that I will wear one day when it's raining and I'm painting the house that happens to be really scratchy and doesn't fit me at all? But hey, you know, let's keep it in case. Well, in case of what? Like somebody else needs that shirt. And to be able to let go. And I love that you made this parallel, the menstrual of the body, because when you think of it, the body uses that time to release what it doesn't need. And this notion that we would do it with our thoughts and we would do it with our friends. You know, like I remember a period, I was maybe a little bit aggressive about it. Looking back, I could have done it maybe a little more gently, but I would literally review, what is this friendship about? And I remember one of my friends who had been friends for 10 years, maybe, and she was a taker. She really was. She would always take. And she just wasn't very generous. And I started looking at it from like, what does it feel like to be friends with this person? And she made me question, like, I don't want to be friends with people that make me question, am I too generous? Like, I don't like that. Like, I didn't like that. And I remember calling her and being like, I need to break up with you as my friend. Like, this is not a friendship that works for me. And maybe at some point it will. And that was spring. That was very much a spring cleaning action, you know, to be able to say, is this serving the, frankly, after I did it, we became friends again, maybe 10 years later. And she said that was one of the most helpful. It was difficult and painful, of course, but you know, maybe nature has its own ways of being difficult and painful that end up serving a purpose. And so to be able to look at your thoughts, your friends, your clothes, your to-dos, your foods, you know, some of your food makes you not feel well. It's like, well, why do you keep eating them? Like, I don't do sugar. That's one of the ways I've lost my 200 pounds is I really decided sugar to me is a drug. I'm not saying it is to everyone, although I have suspicions that it does create something that's addictive in nature. But deciding not to do it was the result of what is true for me now. When I was on my way to gaining all this weight, I didn't care. I mean, there was no commitment to be healthy. And so, you know, Nutella made a lot of sense. I liked it. And so But now that my commitment is to have energy and feel healthy and fit in my jeans and not feel like when I want to go work out, I'm so exhausted because the sugar has just zapped my energy, that is now more important to me. And so to be able to take a step back and choose those things, as we were saying earlier, and spring cleaning is a beautiful way to do that. Just do literally the way you do your closets, if you do your closets, and to have a list of your own important priorities, you know, like, is this beautiful? Is this helpful? Is this in working order? Do I need to fix it? Do I need to upgrade it? Do I need to never use it again? You know, and to be able to scan your life through that lens so that what you eat, what you look at, where you spend your time, where you spend your money, where you spend your energy, of course, is really the result of I've thought about it. And this is of the three things that are possible right now. This is the one I want to do. This is the one that feels the most, again, your own criterions. Like I'm not there to position it as like, I should tell you which ones are the priorities, but you should for your own life. You should know that if in a moment you literally look at, you know, I have an hour and I'm exhausted. Do I want to take a nap or do I want to go for a run? Because that gives me energy to go for some physical activity. And when I come sit down for a meal, do I want to have an afternoon where I'm foggy and not very energetic and take a nap all afternoon? That's okay. But don't pretend that I'm going to do fries and shake and, you know, all of those carby and have energy. I won't, you know? And so to have the self, I was going to say self-discipline, but in a beautiful, the disciple kind of discipline, not the discipline that's punishing, but rather I care about my energy. I have a big life. I want to be able to go. I'm obsessed with pickleball right now. Obsessed. I play twice a day. That's my thing. And if I don't eat well or I don't sleep enough, I cannot go play or not well. And that's not fun. I want to go play and have fun. And so to be able to realize the effect that talk about that in the parenting dynamic. You know, if I go out late at night and I don't sleep enough and then my lovely child jumps on my bed and wants to laugh with me, I will not be very happy. But if I've rested and if I've made choices that are super caring, all of a sudden she runs on my bed and nothing could make me happier. And so to be able to manage that bank of, it's a PhD. It's a PhD in life, you know, to be able to pick and choose and make decisions a little bit more proactively. If I do this, then this is going to happen. So do I want that to happen? And if I don't, shall I do a different choice? Mm. I mean, it's actually pretty simple. It's not easy to do, but it's pretty simple.
Yeah. Okay. So as you were speaking, I had a big aha moment. So as my listeners will know, my daily practice that I do every day is I pull a tarot card. That's my way of connecting to my intuition. Over the years, they've become eerily prophetic for me. And so this morning I pulled the archetype of Kali Ma, and I'm showing this to Soph now. And she's the feminine archetype of spring cleaning. Oh. So she comes up in April when everything's about to bloom, but her energy is really about crazy catalytic destruction so that we can create. And so I've actually been dreading all day. I'm like, oh gosh, because I know what happens usually when I pull Kali in the morning. So I've been waiting for a call from Gideon's school or for something crazy to happen. But now I'm like, wow, okay, I think this was, she actually wanted to come in here today because when we think about the productivity, take fertility, for example. So I'm gearing up to do IVF. And so right now I'm very much in a fertility mindset. And what's really interesting is that when you think about the womb space, which is where we create, it's our creation center. So we can create a baby there. We also create projects from there. We create ideas energetically. But when we have our moon flow, in order to have a healthy uterine lining the following cycle, you have to completely release all the lining. And I've had uterine complications, so I've lived this a lot myself. And what's really fascinating to me is this idea that we have to cyclically engage in a complete release in order to create space for what is new, for what is present and what's important. And our society, at least I don't know about French society, but in the US, I don't think we grow up knowing how to release.
Right.
It's not something that we're really taught to do. If you think about emotions, even, you know, good girls aren't supposed to get angry or cry a lot. You know, we're supposed to be buttoned up. So we keep these things inside. We keep these things on our to-do list that really ultimately hold us back, because when we don't allow ourselves to fully release, we can't welcome what is present for us now.
I love this parallel. It's so powerful to think of it as, if nothing else, the motivation to let go so that you can create something that, I mean, Be Current, which is the name of my company, obviously to be current is that idea. Like, you cannot be current and hold on to all sorts of leftover from the past, or, by the way, projections into my future that are scaring me. You know, like, being current is really like in this moment right now, and then right now, and then again right now. You know, like, how do you be current like that in all of your affairs, particularly your inner ones? But I love this idea that physically, when my body no longer needs what my body is doing, that it releases it, and it not just for my period, but it occurs, you know, by sweating and by eliminating in all sorts of ways. And to not see that as the parallel with the rest of our lives, I just myself had a big aha with that, that it's just really nature knows. I mean, it might be cliche, but it's like you look at the butterfly transformation, like, it can't carry whatever it was before it was a butterfly. And what a beautiful way to look at it, with always, it's always leading to, and now what? And now what? And what is the very next step for this to happen? And is it to wrap it up and be done with it? Like, I remember when my daughter was born, there definitely was some elements that I decided to no longer spend time with. And that is exactly that same act of saying, you know what? At the moment, no, not anymore. I would rather be rested and spend an evening with her doing some fun, creative, glittery, something crazy than to commit to yet one more thing and come home and she's already in bed or whatever, you know, and sometimes make the choice to go out with, you know, and not be there to do the glittery thing. And that's okay too, you know, as long as it is the result of what is my deliberate choice in this moment.
I love this. So earlier we were talking about the Be Current system as a way that moms and entrepreneurs can really break this cycle of self-abuse. So I thought we would wrap up by talking a little bit about what the system is and how it functions in that way as a tool. And I can share a little bit about my experience with it, because I can say from experience, it absolutely does the job.
That's beautiful. You know, it was born out of everything we've talked about today, which is, I like to do a lot of things. Like, I have a big life. I wanted to write books. I wanted to build houses. I wanted to have deep friendships. And so in order to do that, there was a muscle, a skill. I think it's a skill, actually. I really do. I don't think I was born with it and you weren't. I really believe that it's something that we just don't research or study or think we can change. And so at some point I was running a company that grew very, very fast to 12 locations. It was a spa concept, you know, called Shape House, where people would go and basically lay down and sweat and watch a movie or relax for a minute. And it grew to 12 locations, 300 employees, and, you know, hundreds of people coming every day, and $10 million company, you know, not exactly overnight, but over a couple of years, which was very, very rapid. And I remember being at my house one day and thinking, how do I do that the way I want to do it? Because I could see where I could do it out of stress and out of, like, working more hours and, you know, just like pushing harder and harder and harder. And I just went, that does not appeal. So what options are they, you know? And I started developing systems where I would have less touch points, but more leverage, you know, like do things in a way. So I started looking at what can I delegate, like who at the amount of money I make per hour versus someone else that could make less per that hour, having someone help you and pay for that actually saves you money. It's like a funny concept that people don't necessarily, especially entrepreneurs, like hiring someone to help could look like an expense, but it could also look like an enormous savings because you are not busy doing these things. You can focus on generating more income for the company. And so I remember sitting there going like, how do I not stop all these things that I want to continue to do? How do I carry my culture for the company when six of the companies were of the locations were in New York and I was in LA? Like, how do I impact my people? And so this system was born out of, I guess, creativity and the womb and the wound somehow, both of them, you know, like your message as often I've heard, but this idea that how do I continue to do what I love, not less, but differently, so that I can really continue to focus on what brings me joy and was the birth of this. And so the system is a project management system that I teach. BeCurrentToday.com is where you can find out all about it. And it helps you organize your thoughts, your ideas, your to-dos, your deciding to not do lists as well. And it really helps you start your day knowing exactly that what you're doing is what is aligned with your life, as opposed to spend your entire morning deciding what you need to do next. So it has a certain spring cleaning, you know, energy to it, and Kali kind of energy for sure. Like, no, I'm not doing that. Or no, I'm not doing it now. Or no, I'm not doing it this big, you know?
Yes. Well, I'm trying to find the right words for this. When I implemented the Be Current system, I think the first piece of awareness it gave me was simply how much I was expecting of myself and how unrealistic that was. Because one of the things I love about your system, Soph, is the way that I have a board for today, I have a board for this week, and I get to move those tasks between those two boards. And I think even just before this call, I was looking at the tasks I have slated for this week, and I was like, there's no way that I can do everything this week. There's just no way. So why am I expecting this of myself? And why do I resist letting something drop away so that I can really focus on what's important right now? And just having that awareness is quite revelatory, because we wonder why, as motherpreneurs, we're always feeling depleted and we're always feeling burnt out. And I think sometimes it's because we put all this pressure on ourselves, but there's no one telling us that it's too much. And sometimes we really need that bird's eye view to realize for ourselves, this is too much and we cannot do this. You know, the other beautiful thing that was catalyzed by your system was I finally decided to hire a VA. Because when I looked at those tasks, I was like, there's just no way, I can't do it all alone. And I had a marketing intern already, but I was like, no, it's time.
I mean, that is what the system does for you. It's a mirror. So maybe for you, it does this. And maybe for somebody else, one friend of mine that I taught the system to realized she had to quit her job because she looked at the board and she looked at what was otherwise floating in her head. It had now become materialized, you know, on one of those boards on Trello. And she looked at it and said, I hate all of it. I want to do none of those things. Like, if I were to start any of them, I would feel like, ugh, I don't want to do this. And yes, it does create waves and chaos a little bit sometimes, but that stuff is trolling in your head anyway. So it's not like it's not affecting you. It's just that the system allows to see what it is so that you can make an informed decision, like I'm going to hire a VA, or like, I don't want to do this job anymore. Like, you know, I need to put something on the board that's a little bit more self-caring. Like, one of my people noticed that everything that had to do with her self-care was always first to go. So she would just put it down, like, I don't have time for the massage, the hair, the this, the that. And it was a very sad and sobering thing for her to realize, wow, it's like everything that serves others always gets done, and what serves me doesn't. And no need to push more. You know, like, I mean, I'm a psychologist by trade, so I sometimes want to get in there, but I don't need to, because the board speaks, you know, the board reflects and mirrors to you a wisdom that otherwise is a little bit difficult to know, because it's trolling like a pinball in our head and we don't even know what it is. It's just this gnawing low-grade stress that we don't even know what it's from. So yes, it has this quality of putting it up like right in front of you so you get to see.
Yep, kind of like what our kids do, right?
Yes.
You know, they're kind of the dark mirror, and the B current system is a mirror as well. And we need that. We really do. You know, in the energy of Kali, she's not gentle. She's not a gentle goddess. But she gets stuff done, you know, and she cuts away what doesn't matter. And I think that motherhood does that. Really, any crucible that we walk through in life will do it. And I love the idea of having kind of a daily portal to that, to self-love, because at the end of the day, that's really what's left over when we strip away what doesn't matter. It's that ability to look into the mirror and then make the loving choice. And the idea that we could do that in the simple context of daily productivity, to me, is incredibly profound.
Oh, what a beautiful way to say it. Thank you.
Well, Soap, I am so delighted you came on today. This has been an amazing deep conversation. So tell us a little bit more about where we can find you, because I know that a lot of listeners will be quite piqued.
You know, becurrenttoday.com is the website. It's the portal to all of it. You can find it the Instagram and the usual suspects. There is a quiz on the site that people are loving, which is kind of a way to identify how you particularly will give birth to your ideas, and how do you transfer, you know, all these thoughts into actual executions, you know, if you want to do them. And so the quiz is kind of cool, and, you know, on Instagram and just lots of things. So if you go to just the basis, the website, and from there, you can find lots of blogs, lots of content about some of these things we talked about today.
Wonderful. And I'll link all of this in the show notes so you can go check it out. So any closing words of wisdom for our audience today?
You know, if we weren't clear the entire time, I would say self-love is really the way to go. It's kind of my closing for everything is this act I'm about to do? Is this time I'm about to spend? Is this thought I'm having right now, is this a loving thought? And if it's not, gotta go. Just redirect the boat so that it becomes, you know, your standard place is not a place of self-criticism. It's not a place of not enoughness. You know, it's a place of, I show up really well and keep making choices that make me feel like I show up the way I want in my life.
I love it. And it's so important for us and for what we teach our children, because I think at the end of the day, all we really want is to feel happy and healthy within ourselves. And I can't think of a greater wish for my son than the same. So thank you, Soap. I'm so glad you were here today. And I'm so grateful for the work that you do in the world. It's so potent and profound.
Thank you. Thank you for being such a It was lovely. It is lovely to work with you and have you study all this, because you bring so much depth, you know, it's beautiful. Thank you for that.
Oh, you're so welcome. And thank you to everyone who listened with us today. Please go check out Soph. She is amazing. So interesting, so multifaceted. And I know that you're going to love her work. So my dears, I'm sending you so much love, so many blessings, and I'll talk to you next week. Thanks for joining me on this journey to sanctity, sovereignty, and sustainability. You bring such joy to my soul, and I want to hear from you. You can tag me on Instagram at uncorporette or email me anytime at rachel@uncorporette.com. I love to hear from you, and I create for you, so please reach out. And finally, if this episode was meaningful for you, please leave me a review. This is how others will find the podcast. And as you know, it's my mission to activate the divine feminine CEOs I know will change the world. You're one of them, my love. So thanks for being here.